It's time for Microbrew Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the weekly podcast, and that was a bad week of baseball. The Milwaukee Brewers, oh my gosh, they just had an opportunity. There were moments during the week where the Brewers were tied in the standings with the Philadelphia Phillies, but never at the end of a day, because on the two occasions where the Phillies lost and the Brewers found themselves pulled to even for that last wildcard spot, the Brewers went on to lose later that night. Three excruciating losses against the Miami Marlins, a team that is not a contender, at American Family Field, just typifying what this team, what the season has been. This team, we've talked about it before, they have been a below 500, well below 500 team since the end of May, and it is all but over. There is a miracle scenario where six outcomes go one way and the Brewers still make the playoffs, but you know where that's headed. We know where that's headed. And it is time to really look back and say what went wrong. I already introduced myself. I'm J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line is Kurt Hoag, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was there on Sunday as the Brewers lost yet another, I mean, heartbreaker, Kurt, but like, honestly, do they even like come as a surprise anymore? You know, at this point, we've seen so many late excruciating losses. I think Bob Nightingale had the stat that since the trade deadline, which we can talk about that, but it'd been 11 games where the winning run had scored in the eighth or later. Certainly that was another case on Sunday when the Brewers lost in extras after they had blown an opportunity to win it in extras. It's just, I don't even know where to go. There's so many ways we could talk about this, so many angles to dissect. But bottom line, on Sunday, you were in that clubhouse, and I'm guessing that was about as bad as it had been, knowing that essentially their playoff hopes are over.
Yeah, there's been this sort of, I don't want to say lack of urgency, but like lack of stated or public urgency. And you never know what's going on underneath the surface. But pretty much after every game, it was, you know, same thing. It was, we control our, you know, we just got to win games. We can control what we can control. We kind of control our fate. Even after the loss Saturday night, I think Devin Williams said it doesn't really change very much, which it does.
I don't know what he's not looking at the same standings I am, but
you
okay.
You are now basically screwed unless you win out. And even if you do win out, you still might be screwed. So it was a... Yeah, it was. I think the reality was setting in. I think, you know, it always kind of lingered there, but there was like a hope that things would turn around somehow. They haven't been turned around for 4 months, but there was a hope that they would, that they're going to. And there's still that little beacon of light, the tiny little glimmer of hope that the Brewers will sweep the Diamondbacks and the Phillies will get swept. Now the Phillies are playing Houston. It's very possible that happens. I'm not going to say I think it's likely at all. But the more unlikely thing, JR, is the Brewers would have to sweep their first three-game series since June 17th through the 19th.
Yeah, yes. I there's no evidence that they can do that. They've won four games in a row at any point since I think since the trade deadline and maybe even since before that. That's not good enough. That doesn't get it done. They needed to go on a run, and I mean, credit to them, early in the season they did. And I've said this before, not recently, but really a baseball team can really tread water for most of the season and go on one big run and be in a playoffs, especially with the expanded field. That's what the Brewers team is. They were treading water. I would argue a little worse than that, but still for most of the season, they're just ho-hum, and they had a good run in April and May, and that's why we're still talking about the playoffs at the end of the year. But Kurt, this team was not good. Not as a playoff team. They're going to finish above 500, of course. Their record will be fine. But when six teams make the playoffs and your team isn't one of them, your team isn't good. And I honestly think for 4 months, they showed that. They showed that they were a below 500 team. And I don't know if there's one thing. Certainly there isn't one thing that you can point to. But is there an overriding concept that sort of describes... This will be a question we have in the postseason. Like, how does a 95-win team keep most of the same players, certainly most of the difference makers from that unit, come back the next year in a division that is supposed to be, I think, a little bit worse, and in a playoff situation that's supposed to be better, and not do anything with that? You know, like, I know they had these excruciating losses. Those things happen. I think they got bit by a little bit of bad luck. I'm not going to say it was a lot of bad luck, but a little bit down the stretch here. But I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it, because it just feels like everything kind of got worse at once. I don't know how you would look at it. Is there one thing you can point to or some theme you can point to here?
I think the general motion of running it back was short-sighted, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I think you're right.
The offense was better than it was last year. I don't think by a significant margin, like in terms of their finish and scoring.
Was that by OPS plus though? You mean they were better for the run environment, or you mean they were better like whole statistically?
For the run, like relative to the league, they were a little bit better on the whole. But you cannot tell me, JR, after watching what we've watched, not only these last four games where we put up 9 runs in four plus games with the extra innings against the Marlins, that it's a good offense. And you know, we've talked about this, feels like ad nauseum this year. Like, what is this offense? Well, it's certainly not good. It just has the capability of hitting home runs and, you know, being good enough on a lot of nights. So even the, you know, relative bright spot of the team was the offense getting a little bit better, still wasn't nearly good enough. So yeah, you take on some risk by running it back and not really adding like fail safe options on the roster. And then the bullpen has just gone to, it's just gone to the bad place in the second half of the season. It's been bad.
The Brewers scored 9 runs against the Marlins in 4 games. Now, the Marlins are not a bad pitching team. They have the guy who's going to win the Cy Young, ironically. That's the only game the Brewers won in the 4 games. Of course, the bullpen is responsible for all 3 losses. I don't mean like they are personally blew it. I just mean all the losses, they're on the hook for those. So it was a situation where the Brewers could have won all 4 of these games. Of those 9 runs, 2 came on groundouts, 1 on a sack fly, 1 on a grazed by pitch with the bases loaded. I mean, just grazed Luis Urias's jersey. There was a home run, 1 home run in the whole series, and it was a ball that Yelich hit that barely got out. It hit the top of the wall and bounced over. I'm not begrudging runs, but I'm just pointing out that these runs, this was not the product of a team that ever got hot, ever strung hits together. They did have one inning where they had a couple doubles that scored runs, you know, another one of these runs scored only because it was the runner on second base in extra innings. You know, like they needed some things to go right even to plate anything, and so that's what you're talking about with this offense. That's certainly as bad as it's been for the offense, but they were in this unique position where they had guys at every spot that you could say were fine. You know, like they had fine someone at every spot. So no obvious places where you could say, well, they need to get that guy out of there and replace him with someone much better. But nobody was above average. Nobody was a star. There was no one who was able to really step up and seize the bull by the horns. And I think that comes to Christian Yelich, who made another really ugly defensive gaffe this weekend, albeit I don't think it was one that cost them the game, but it certainly didn't help. He has struggle down the stretch. He is just a guy, has been just a guy for a while, maybe a little better than that because he has been able to use his speed a little more as a leadoff hitter. But I, you know, not having that superstar, I feel like, is a major, major problem for this offense. There's no one that they can rely on. And I mean, teams should be able to get more than one superstar in the lineup, of course, but when you're a team that has been mindful of its finances, for better or worse, I know there's, you got to start talking about ownership and stuff. I'm not here to do that, but for a team that tries to think frugally, if the guy that you pay to be your star is just a guy, you're not going to have other guys that you're paying around him that are going to be capable of matching that or overcoming that. I feel like as good a season as Christian Yelich has had on the new terms of the type of player that he is, it's still been, I still think that's one of the top 3 things you look at with this team, is one of the reasons why this team it wasn't good enough. Would you look at it similarly?
Yeah, I think so. It's become one of the hurdles that they have to clear to get back to competitiveness. I think when you have elite pitching, you know, and you get a 3-win season out of Christian Yelich, that's fine. And like you said, like under the new, you know, the new constraints or the new way of viewing, like what a good season is from him, it was fine. He was like he's been a league average hitter, and give you some value on the base paths. But given what you're paying him, and not only that, but I think what the roster as constructed like expects out of him to be that star, when you're not getting it, it drops the entire offense a whole another level. And we see these stretches where he looks really good again, but can't ever sustain it, and you just wonder what's going on. And it was pretty ugly over the last few weeks of the season. You kind of are hoping that someone can step up and kind of get the hot bat that carries you. And when you look at this lineup and you're like, okay, we need a guy to get hot and carry us, you naturally look to the guy who's making $25 million a year. And quite frankly, he's not living up to that really at all at this point. I mean, you kind of just got to face the reality with it. And I don't know exactly how you navigate this going forward. I mean, there's obviously, it's not a question of where you go from here. You know where you go from here. He's going to be probably playing left field still and hitting, I guess, probably at the top of your lineup. But in terms of like, how do you get the production up? I don't know. I think that's a question that the Brewers don't have an answer to either.
It's just truly one of the great enigmas in Wisconsin sports history. The guy hits a 499-foot home run in Colorado, this beautiful, gorgeous swing that we've seen time and time again in past years, and then he doesn't homer again until knocking one off the very top of the wall, in the last week of the season. And that's just kind of how it's been. Every now and then he has a game or a moment, and you're like, that's Christian Yelich that you know and love. He's still in there somewhere. But for the most part, it's a lot of ground balls, a lot of weekly hit ground balls, and guy's got speed. He still has assets that he brings to the table, but like you said, 3-win player, that's probably right. And that's what they're going to have going forward. I don't know how they make up for that in terms of, how you are able to build an offense, build a payroll, when you know that the guy that you're spending the most money on is going to be just that. Trying to figure out where to go next, because I want to go back to the trade deadline. I want to go back to this move that I think will be the singular thing that defines the 2022 season. And I tweeted this over the weekend. I don't think you can quite call the Josh Hader deal a disaster. There's still a couple minor leaguers who could evolve into pretty great players. I don't think the deal will ever be regarded as good. They would have to become superstars, both of them, I think, for that to change. Because I think you can look at that deal and say, I don't know if that's the moment things went south. I think things were already kind of headed in that direction. But that is the thing you can look to, is say they made their team worse. We have some data to say that we think the team got worse after that Hader trade. And they didn't, they end up missing, they're going to miss the playoffs by a game or two. So I think now that we have hindsight, we can kind of safely say that was a bad decision. And I don't know if, maybe Josh Hader's struggles that he experienced that first month he was in San Diego continue with the Brewers, and the Brewers end up losing more games than ever. But you just look at Matt Bush and Taylor Rogers have had some flashes. They also gave up way too many home runs. Devin Williams is about the only trustworthy arm in that bullpen, true shutdown arm. He goes Friday, throws 30 pitches to barely hold on to that 1-0 win, and then he comes right back on Saturday. And you got to figure, this is probably not the best scenario for Devin Williams. And sure enough, he gives up 2 runs, and the Brewers lose that game. They haven't been able to find combinations that work late in games. They're in constantly close games because the offense doesn't give them any runs, so they're constantly in need of shutdown innings, and the bullpen just hasn't been able to provide that. And so I guess I don't know how your feelings on that trade have evolved. I think you could, there is a scenario where 3 years from now we look back and say, yes, it cost them the 2022 season, but Robert Gasser is part of a rotation for a team that's going to win the Central, and Esteri Ruiz is at the top of the lineup, and like, there's a chance it's still okay. But man, I don't know how you look back on that trade or not think of it as like number one storyline from the 2022 season at this point.
I do think it is the number one storyline when we look back at this season. That's what it's going to be. Now, like in the moment, do I think it's the number one factor, or the number one storyline like right now? Not really, not necessarily. The Brewers did make their team worse when you look at, and some of the Matt Bush and Taylor Rogers performances have been like confounding to a degree, because they're not that bad and they usually don't give up that many homers. But since coming to Milwaukee, they are dinger dispensaries and have cost the team, the metrics I think you're talking about is they've cost the team more win percentage added, in this case win percentage subtracted, than Josh Hader has with the Padres, even though he struggled really badly for like a month there. So it's, here's the thing with making a deal like that and the bullpen suddenly getting kind of bad, you open yourself up to the speculation, to the questions, and it's a legitimate question. Now, I don't think we will ever know. I mean, there's no way to know. It's impossible to say whether that was the thing that tanked the season. Do they make the playoffs with Josh Hader? And to, a follow-up to that, I think, as well, is like, If they make the playoffs with Josh Hader, does it really matter? Like, is this team that much different, even if they have peak Josh Hader pitching the ninth inning? Maybe. They do play a lot of close games, but, it's just a really tough call. There's still a ton of holes at a lot of different places, even if you do have Josh Hader. So it's been the trade that's been really hard to figure out and, like, pinpoint what, why, how, who won this thing. Who's going to win this thing? Like, it's It's been a confusing mess since the moment it happened, and in the fact that like the team, you got swept in Pittsburgh immediately after it, and then you never really recovered from that. Like I said, it's going to open you up to questions, and I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. It's I'm very fond of saying any team can win the World Series once they get in the playoffs, especially if they happen to have a couple special starting pitchers like the Brewers still have. Corbin Burns had a tremendous performance matched up with Sandy Alcantara over the weekend. Brandon Woodruff has absolutely shoved since he came back from his injury. I mean, I think long-term extensions with those guys will be talked about quite a bit in the offseason. I think it'll be curious either way. Whatever the Brewers decide to do, if they open up talks or don't, I think it'll be very interesting, very, very fascinating. But you know, like, do they have enough with the way the postseason is now? There's now an extra series. You know, the Brewers would have to go to, if they had gotten that last playoff spot, they'd have to go to St. Louis and win 2 of 3, and then they're in the NLDS against a very, very good team, and then they have to win again in the NLCS, and then the World Series. Like, it's harder now for a team to just sort of back in and then go crazy in the postseason. It's still very possible, but again, this Brewers team hasn't won 4 games in a row in an eternity, more than 4 games in a row in an eternity. Like, they're going to have to do that if they're going to win a World Series, you know, mathematically, not necessarily, but like, it's just really hard to envision this team catching fire. They haven't done it all year. So you're right. I don't think with Josh Hader, this team is in markedly better position. They might be a little bit better and they might make the playoffs, but I don't know if it's markedly better. You don't know if his struggles, like if he does rebound in Milwaukee the way he did in San Diego, you'd like to think so, but you never know. Josh Hader's been very good. The last 11 games, his ERA is, I believe, 0.84 with San Diego. So he's had some really bad blow-up outings, but those were mostly in August, and now he's really, really sort of gotten it back on track. San Diego going to the playoffs as of Sunday after the Brewers lost one more time to Miami. What is the evaluation you have of the front office and the manager this year? Certainly we talked about that trade. That's going to be something that David Stearns is going to talk about after the season. It's going to be a black mark on his, at least in the short term, going to be a black mark on his resume in Milwaukee. There's been a lot of talk about him moving on to New York, and I don't know if we know anything more about that, or if that's really something that's in the future, or just something people are talking about at this point. He's made a lot of good moves. I don't think this was his best season by any stretch of the imagination. Outside of the Renfro move, I don't know if there's anything that really stands out that really helped this team get better. And I think that's worth noting. And Craig Counsell has, you know, Craig Counsell is going to, in my opinion, be manager of the Brewers for the next several years, as long as he wants to. He's overseen an unprecedented run of success, as has David Stearns. But, you know, you start hearing the rumblings now. People get a little irritated. A lot of decisions that have gone wrong. How would you evaluate these guys this season?
I think the front office for sure. Like I said earlier, you stand pat and then it doesn't work out. And then you look, I don't know. Does it make you look worse than if you had made a bunch of moves and they don't work out? I'm not sure. It in theory was not a terrible strategy. You're in the NL Central. You know, you should be able to make the playoffs and then try to get hot. And it's very clear that they've stated that that's kind of just their goal. But instead of just going for the bite of the apple, we're gonna pull up that that contentious line,
infamous
there.
Phrase it, at this point.
Oh boy! Instead of just going for a bite of the apple, it seemed like all they did was go for just, you know, a little nibble, go for a bite, and then see what happens from there. Instead of, you know, making some semblance of a push, like there's nothing, making some win now moves does not exclude you from winning in 4 years as well. You know, like, well-run organizations find ways to make it work. I'm not saying the Brewers aren't a well-run organization at all. Like, they've been very successful. But it just felt like it was, what's sort of the bare minimum that we can do to ensure the highest likelihood of making the playoffs? And when the asking prices on some players were too high, they didn't go for it. They didn't stretch the budget, although Mark Attanasio would tell you they did for Andrew McCutchen, who has been a below league average hitter. And you're giving him, what, 600 plate appearances at DH. And that's, you know, I don't know if that's a front office thing or a managerial thing, to kind of get to the council part of the question. But I think, and maybe it was just, you know, you don't have Josh Hader around all the time. It exposed, you know, some decisions that backfired. much more often than we're used to seeing. I mean, I'm just thinking about a Sunday's game, and it's a minor thing, but when Justin Topa came back out for the seventh, I was kind of doing the math in my head and going, okay, wouldn't you just in theory go like Boxberger, Rodgers, Bush if you're committed to using Rodgers and Bush, which they were in high leverage spots? Why is Justin Topa pitching in the seventh inning of a tie game that you have to win? It didn't completely make sense. I know you had Taylor Rodgers up to come in for the lefty Jesus Sanchez, but guess what, JR? They're going to pinch hit for him with a righty anyway. So does it really matter where he comes in? And it backfired to a degree. Topa gave up two runs. So it's just been things like that where a move happens and you sort of scratch your head a little bit. You can kind of you see the logic for it, but you're like, that's an interesting one. And then if it doesn't work, those kind of add up over time. And I think there was just more of those than in years past.
Yeah, and to go back to the early thing you said, okay, San Diego went all out. They're the opposite of what the Brewers did. They added Josh Bell. They added, of course, Juan Soto. They added Josh Hader. They added Brandon Drury. And they are just barely getting into the postseason in the last week of the season. They're still a quality team. No one thinks they're going to win the World Series. They didn't turn themselves into the juggernaut I think they thought they would. And my favorite story is looking at the side-by-side statistics of Juan Soto in San Diego and the guy who replaced him in Washington, a 30-year-old rookie named Joey Meneses, who went on an absolute tear, has a 960 OPS and 13 home runs. This is a guy who's made his major league debut because of this move in 225 plate appearances. He's got 13 home runs, 33 RBIs. He's a 30-year-old rookie. So like baseball does that. And in small samples, you never really know what you're going to get, but the Padres now get Juan Soto and Josh Hader for additional years. You know, like they are going to continue to reap the benefits on long term. You got to figure that's going to happen. You know, the Brewers, they chose not to make any sort of move like that. And I think I said last week that wondering about Matt Bush, if they bring him back, I mean, they might as well. He's got two arbitration years, I think, eligible still. And he's had overall a pretty decent year when you look at the Rangers and the Brewers, and outside of the home run ball, I think he's been very good here too. So there is some long-term, you know, possibilities there for the Brewers, but you just would have liked to have seen a little bit, one of these years, just maybe a real emphasis on improving the team and truly trying to add on. And I think to some degree that happened in 2018. Mike Moustakas was not a monster in 2018, but you know, he was an interesting boost, and Jonathan Scope didn't work out that year, but they did seemingly address what they needed and seemingly tried to get better and did get better. This year, like you said, I think they probably thought they were good enough. And I don't know if that's a ownership or a front office. I think you could probably argue, like we're kind of saying here, you can make all the moves in the world and it may not matter. That's probably true. But it sure seemed to send a message that the clubhouse didn't love. And it certainly sent a message that the fans didn't love. We'll get into three up, three down here in a second. But just there's a lot more conversation to be had when the season ultimately finally does end. Could be on Monday. Could be a little later. I mean, heck, they could go to the playoffs, so we'd still talk about this. What does a team have to do to bring some excitement back to the Milwaukee Brewers? Yeah, and we've talked about the attendance issues. You know, they're on the cusp of, you know, in this home stretch playoff chase, they're not filling up 3/4 of their stadium for this series against the Marlins, this weekend series with beautiful fall weather. There seems to be a lot of lost juice. It certainly stems primarily, I think, from the on-field product, the team not winning, but I don't know if there's more to it than that. I don't know if it means signing a slugger or just figuring out a way to market this team differently besides the X-Golf that we've made fun of. And I think X-Golf has its place, but like every time they tweet about it, a part of me dies. It's like, why are we constantly talking about X-Golf? When you have a team in the playoff chase, it feels like you're wasting energy on something else. I don't know how you feel about that. If there are a couple things you think this team needs to do going forward, specifically for 2023, to get some fire and some life back into the enthusiasm for the Milwaukee Brewers.
I do think they need to spend some money. Like, it's quite simple. I think a lot of times in baseball, we see, you know, like throwing money at problems is as an easy fix when it's not so much that there's a lot of bad contracts and, you know, guys that don't live up to the contract that they're given. And so it's not necessarily a one size fits all solution. But that said, I think the Brewers are probably going to be looking at about $100 million in salary after arbitrations. Maybe a tick higher than that. and there should be plenty of flexibility within that. I think that's one way to, but you'd also don't want to make a move just to try to gain fan interest back. I think they were hoping that Andrew McCutchen would kind of be like the big name signing that people would be interested in, and I just don't think he quite carries that level of cachet at this point of his career. There just needs to be some semblance of overhaul, some semblance of like of obviously trying to make the team better rather than sort of just standing pat and having a boring offseason, that which paired with a relatively boring season kind of makes people just tune out and not care as much. I do think there's a level of I don't want to say taking success for granted, but when it's year five of possibly going to the playoffs and all of a sudden the team is performing like it is, there's going to be a natural decline in interest. So next year's a big one. You've got to, in terms of like just generating fan interest back, the Brewers have to seize the opportunity. And I do think there's a bridge between the front office and, or a gulf between the front office, excuse me, and the fans that needs to be bridged by some semblance of addressing what went wrong, and kind of understanding where this disappointment comes from and why people aren't coming to the gates. And I think the Brewers do need to face that and not, you know, put it off for one reason or the other. So yeah, big off season coming up. I would expect there to be significant changes. I just don't know how you roll back this same team that I don't think ever just completely clicked on the field or even off. And that's a tall task.
Yeah, Andrew McCutchen is, I've said this before, but I think his signing is ultimately one of the major missteps of the season. Not because he's a bad dude, he's a great dude and a leader and a proven veteran and all that, but he's just not at the state in his career where he could help the team, and they supposedly stretched the budget to get him. If they were going to stretch the budget, they should have probably signed somebody else, especially if they were going to soak up the DH at-bats when they have a couple other guys on this team that could stand to be the DH that aren't strong defensively. Christian Yelich, Keston Hira, those are the guys I'm talking about in particular. And maybe more for Rowdy Tellez, but the fact is they really felt like McCutchen could still be that guy. You bring up his sort of off-field cachet, and I didn't even think about that, like that being something that didn't quite materialize in Milwaukee. I don't imagine he'll be back next year, nor will Colton Wong. There'll be, like you said, a lot of changes, a lot of young kids from AAA that are ready, Sal Frelick, Bryce Terang, Estuary Ruiz, maybe Robert Gasser. These guys are going to be here next year in some capacity, so we'll see how that goes. All right, if we dare, Kurt, let's go to 3 Up, 3 Down and look at some of the more granular details from this week. Here it is, 3 Up, 3 Down. I'll start in the middle of the week where I think, you know, there have been so many bad losses, Kurt, so many. And there's
rank them right now.
You know, I can't.
Give me your top 10.
I can't. I still think that Giants loss with Josh Hader blowing up before the deadline is probably right before the All-Star break, I think, is probably way up there still. There's a Cubs loss in there. There's a Mets loss that's bad. The Rockies loss is super bad and probably number 2 on my list. But we finally, I think, got a moment that purely crystallizes the frustration of the 2022 season. And that was Thursday when the Brewers had a 2-0 lead in the 8th inning. And Avisail Garcia, former Brewers outfielder Avisail Garcia, who's very good for the Brewers, but has been injured, had 7 home runs coming into that game, was just coming off the injured list, has really been disappointing for Miami. The Brewers were right not to sign him. I don't think they ever really were going to re-sign him, but it was the right move. And he hits a bomb to center field off of Freddy Peralta. It was a kind of a strange selection of a pitch, going with the high fastball. And Avisail got all of it. And suddenly a tenuous 2-0 lead turned into a 4-2 loss. Freddy Peralta had a very good first inning. His second inning was pretty bad. And the Brewers had yet another gut-wrenching loss on a night when they really had a chance to make a move there. I don't quite remember. I think they would have moved in a half game ahead of Philadelphia into that final playoff spot if they had won that game. They of course did not. They never quite got past Philly. That's one that I think is going to be remembered, akin to I don't know, like the inverse of the Wes Helms home run, I guess, from 2008. I don't know, former Brewer for the Marlins, this being a former Brewer with the Marlins killing the Brewers. Just a tough time, Kurt. That was a bad one.
Well, the inverse of the West Helms, though. I like that.
You know, I bring that up because 2008, like, I'm trying to think of a season, and we'll talk about this again on another future episode, the level of disappointment that this season is, and we've talked about how this could be the most disappointing because of where expectations started, not because the team is, you know, particularly worse than every other team in Brewers history. I don't want to make that claim, but, like...
I think that's the correct take, by the way. I think this that is correct.
Yeah, so 2008's the only other time I can remember being this... You know, seeing this frustration, you know, the fact that they just lost a lot of close games and they just could not get over the hump. And it looked like they were finally in 2008, they were sliding. They were finally going to make the playoffs for the first time in 26 years. And they slide out of that spot. They slide way out of that spot. And like the level of frustration of September was equal to the level of frustration this September, except, of course, 2008 ends well. So there's this great celebration. That's the only other time I can remember this level of frustration. So 2008 is just kind of high on my mind there. So that's my first one, three up, three down. I don't know what perils you have awaiting on your list here.
Oh boy. I was going to save this one for later, but since you bring up 2008, let's go a year back, JR. 2007, another similar, a similar season to this one. Like it wasn't necessarily just a full-on collapse, but it was more like an extended slippery slope, and they could never ride it.
Tremendous April and May that year. Go ahead.
Yeah, another similar thing is the situation they found themselves in with four games left, down two games, basically needing to make up two games in order to, I guess then it would have been forced game 163, but you know, kind of make the playoffs basically. And so entering Sunday, JR, they were down two games with four left to play. And infamously, this point of the season in 2007 is where Ned Yost said, "The math is on our side."
A legendary quote.
And there was a bit of me inside that chuckled today when counsel said the math is simple. When I asked him just sort of like what's their outlook on things now. So I guess that could have been your remember when, but JR, the math was not on their side.
You are going to love my remember when I get to it. It's going to be eerie. You're going to love it. But yes, before Bites of the Apple, there was the math is on our side. Wonderful time. Let's go back to the beginning of the week. Monday, Adrian Hauser leaves the game with injury. He was not able to continue Tuesday against the Cardinals, right? And yes, that's what it was. Tuesday, and the Cardinals clinching the Central with the win in that game, getting to celebrate the second team, oddly enough, to clinch a playoff spot on the American Family Field turf. The visitors' clubhouse getting worn out with champagne celebrations. Adrian Hauser, a star-crossed year. It started even before the season when he lost his arbitration hearing against the Brewers, although I guess that was probably in the early part of the season. The timeline was a little weird this year. He's faced injury a couple times. He has been ineffective when healthy. He's had some strangely good outings without striking people out, which is unusual. So there are times where he's flashed a little bit. I don't know if it's a pitch selection thing. It feels like they just totally got away from high fastballs, and that maybe could help him, or just... you know, refining his overall arsenal. I don't know, but Adrian Hauser has gone from a guy that was maybe a promising, like, number three, number four type starter to a guy that I don't know if he's still in the plans for the Brewers. I still think there's some talent in there, possibly as a reliever, but really a tough season for him and a guy who just, I think, is probably fallen out of their rotation going forward.
Yeah, he's the name that I'm maybe I don't want to say necessarily interested in, but I go back and forth the most on what the team will do with him. Obviously you could just non-tender him. You could pay him an arbitration, but you know, that's going to be a raise. And is he in your rotation? Is he in the bullpen? So there's a lot of different ways that they could go with him. I'll go with a different starting pitcher. You kind of mentioned it earlier, Corbin Burnes, eight scoreless innings and just an epic pitcher's duel. I mean, when you think about a good pitcher's duel, This is the perfect game. Sandy Alcantara went eight innings, allowed one run that the Brewers kind of just scratched and clawed and then got in the sixth inning. And then Burnes was lights out over eight shutout innings, a game that the Marlins nearly almost won anyway in the ninth inning against Devin Williams, which they would go on to do the next night. But it was it felt like it was big in the moment. I think the team was, a half game back, and losing that game kind of would have put them in sort of the position they're in now, which they're pretty screwed.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term there. And so it was a big time performance from Corbin Burnes, kind of kept the season afloat. And it's just a fun pitching matchup. I have an NL Cy Young vote this year, and I'm not allowed to say who I'm going to vote for. But
Sandy Alcantara sure was good.
The pitcher for the Marlins that day has merited some consideration.
Yes, indeed he has. And I mean, like 1-0 in that game, you can't feel bad about. It was a great game. And I loved your story at jsonline.com, looking at Garrett Mitchell's contributions, the way that he helped scratch across that run. Fascinating what happens in center field this offseason, because you've got some candidates. You've got Tyrone Taylor, who I think we've seen is a big leaguer, probably not a starter. That's just kind of where he's at. He's just too inconsistent. Garrett Mitchell is an interesting case. Is he ready yet to be the everyday guy? Sal Frelick is still in position. I don't imagine that they would have him. I think if they wanted Sal Frelick to be their everyday center fielder, that's who they would have called up and not Garrett Mitchell. So I don't imagine that the club sees him as the guy necessarily, but I don't know where they go. That's a really interesting offseason. Maybe they bring in somebody. Center fielders do not grow on trees, so I don't know if that's realistic that they would bring in somebody. I think it's going to be one of those three guys, at least to top of mind. So fascinating story there. All right, I will close it down. My three up, three down. We'll finish with a pretty nice play by Colton Wong. Talked about how he has struggled defensively this year. Only fair to point out when he saves Milwaukee's bacon on a double play in Wednesday's game against the Cardinals. This week was so bad, Kurt, because it was either a loss or an excruciating win. Excruciating victories. How appropriate.
It's a microcosm of the entire season, JR. Totally.
Absolutely, it's like everything is tough.
I've never seen that many excruciating wins.
Yeah, it's... They just were a bad team and just good enough to hang on in a lot of these games. But Colton Wong saved disaster. Willy Adames on a double play ball. They absolutely had to have a run would have scored. Everything would have changed. But Adames with a bad glove toss, a high glove toss that Wong nonetheless took. Stepped on the bag, toe-tapped the bag, and off-balance throw to first base to get the double play. Brewers end up holding on to beat the Cardinals. Good stuff from Colton Wong. I hope he gets a nice send-off this weekend when the Brewers play Arizona. This will be his last three games, almost certainly in a Brewers uniform. Nice player, quality dude. Really love the nice things he had to say about Milwaukee. Defense fell off a cliff, but not on that play. That was pretty good stuff. And his offense was good this year. He was solid. He's a solid player. They will find another way to play second base next year.
All right, I'll cap this thing off with a little bit of talk of post-Sunday's game. Willy Adames was sitting in the dugout all by his lonesome, just staring after the conclusion of the 4-3 loss in 12 innings. That's kind of how you realize that, oh, it's hitting them now. Like, they are fully realizing what is happening. But I do think, to a greater point, it just shows the passion and like the level of care. I know there was some talk between some fans of like, you know, how many guys on this team, you know, are checked out or truly care, but Willy Adames is not one of them. He's certainly a guy that lives and breathes baseball. He wants to be in that lineup every day. He struggled a lot down the last week and a half of the season after getting red hot. And that played a big role, honestly, in their struggles and their losing games on this homestand. But that was sort of, I think, the first time I saw the reality hit into a player. I think Andrew McCutchen was he was talking post game with the media, but it was like you could tell he didn't want to be there. He was mad as can be and just sort of wanted to be done with it, and I don't blame him for that. Just a lot of frustration in the clubhouse, kind of for the first time that I really saw all year on Sunday.
If you were ranking the likelihood or the certainty you feel of certain guys in certain positions in next year's Brewers starting lineup, I think my number one would be Willy Adames at shortstop. I think he's probably the most cemented guy. His offensive numbers are interesting. He had obviously a ton of home runs, the most of any shortstop in Brewers history, but also some you know, low on base, low contact, struggle a lot at times this year. Defense, that play I just talked about notwithstanding, is very good. I mean, he's a solid guy and just a great personality, and I wish this team could figure out how to market him. I feel like I feel like he could be running this town. Like, I feel like Milwaukee should be like all over how great this guy is and how enthusiastic he is for the game, and that he's just got such a bright personality, and it is not getting out to the people. It's just for some reason not translating the way that I guess I think I'd like it to be. That's only my perception. It's probably not, you know, I don't know if I have the full picture of that, but I don't know, man. Willy Adames should be a star, and it's just for whatever reason it's not breaking through. I don't know. All right, let's go back in time a little bit. It's Remember When, baby.
Red Hot Memories, high school days.
All right, so you were talking about that 2007 season, and it's so funny. I don't have a lot on this one, but I wanted to look back at the 2017 season, the last time the Brewers were eliminated from a playoff contention, because as we know, in every season since, they have in fact made the playoffs. This will be the first time, barring a miracle, the first time in five years that the Brewers have not gone to the playoffs. In 2017, I thought about this, Kurt, because on Sunday I was at the Apple Orchard during this Brewers game, during the Packers game. It was a strange time to be with my family, quite honestly, but you know, I do put family first on occasion, and I was at the Apple Orchard on this day. It was September 30th, 2017. The Brewers had a 6-0 lead on the St. Louis Cardinals. So you were talking about the end of the 2007 season. I want to talk about the end of this season. The last time, like I said, they were eliminated. Now, they were back two. There were two games to play, and they were down two. They needed four outcomes to go correctly. They needed to beat the Cardinals twice. They needed the Rockies to lose twice. Rockies played later that night, so the Brewers just had to do their part. They took a 6-0 lead in the third. They promptly gave back four runs in the bottom of the third, so it was a 6-4 game. And then in the eighth, oh Lord, in the eighth inning, Josh Hader actually came in to face just lefty Greg Garcia. He gave up a single. Josh Hader was not yet Josh Hader. And then Anthony Swarzak, midseason bullpen acquisition, comes in and gives up three runs. I don't believe they were all charged to him, but he gives up a two-out, two-run single to Stephen Piscotty, a follow-up single to Harrison Bader. Harrison Bader!
He's always there.
That broke a 6-6 tie in the eighth. The Cardinals take the lead. Brewers threaten in the ninth. Brett Phillips, I believe, is the last out. Oh, Brett Phillips, so beloved, but swung and missed quite a bit, and swung and missed the last pitch of that game, and that was it. That was the eliminating moment. It was in St. Louis, so that would have been the top of the ninth. But Brewers lose. Their season's over. This is we have not reached that point yet in 2022. That official point could come Monday against the Arizona Diamondbacks, or Philadelphia wins at Houston. Again, like you said earlier, Houston's very good, 104 win team, but they're setting themselves up for what's to come in the playoffs. They don't necessarily need to be throwing everything at the wall to try to beat the Philadelphia Phillies, other than they, you know, have some games off because they're going to get one of the byes, of course, in the AL. So I don't imagine that Houston is necessarily going to be all geared up to play Philly. The Brewers, meanwhile, have to win three games in a row, which I don't know. I got a mini trivia question for you, though. The Brewers, in that 2017 finale, the Brewers did get the tying run to second base in the ninth inning. I don't think you will guess who is pinch running.
Quentin Berry.
Oh, have you looked it up already? That's fascinating. Did you look it up?
No, I'm around Quentin Berry all the time. That's my lone memory of him as a Brewer.
Oh man, that's so great. I thought you'd never get it, and you said it before I could even finish the question.
That was a good effort. But while you were talking about that ninth inning, Quentin Berry's head popped. Quentin Berry's head popped in my head. So
that's wild. Quentin Berry, of course, the first base coach for the Brewers. He was the potential tying run. He had stolen second. And put himself in position, but then Brett Phillips struck out. Very sad. Okay, let's close it down. Kurt, I have no idea where you're going with this. I am eager to find out. It is his take of the week. It's our it is our final Kurt Blanche, maybe final Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun sends it for center and deep.
What do you got, Kurt?
Can I? I had one, and then I felt like it's not seizing the moment well enough. So can we do Kurt Blanche's? I'm gonna do a couple quickies.
A little Kurt Blanchettes. Let's go.
Yes.
Miniatures.
So you remember that time we had a podcast, and I didn't know where I was going with my take here, but I kind of just stumbled upon saying that. Are we sure they failed at the trade deadline by not adding enough because, like, they're not good enough anyway?
Oh, right. The whole maybe...
Maybe it was a good deadline.
The conspiracy theory that they knew they were sunk, even with a 3-game lead in the NL Central, and they didn't want to commit resources to the future.
Maybe by not trying, they were right. Not that it's like... not that it's the right thing to do, but maybe... Maybe they figured, you know, if we're going to win, we should just go with this team we have and hope it works out.
Wouldn't you love the comprehensive sliding doors history of guys that weren't traded at the deadline who ultimately became stars with the teams that didn't trade them away? It would be so great to have like even a list of 25 of those, you know, if GMs are being honest, like, oh yeah, you know, I almost traded Albert Pujols in 2002, but decided I wanted to let this play out, see how this kid does, or 99 before he gets there, you know, something like that.
That's an excellent story idea. We should look into this.
No one's gonna say that. No one's gonna give us the dirt.
Some guys might. Maybe might want their moment in the sun.
Maybe if they're retired. Talking
about the guys they didn't trade. No, you never want to talk about the bad trades, but you can talk about the good non-trades.
It's possible that the Brewers were offered deals for guys that would have wagered future prospects on a team that was gonna lose in the first round of the playoffs at best anyway. You're absolutely right, Kurt.
So my second blanche is I don't super miss expanded rosters. I think it was fun. I don't super miss it. I would prefer to have like, if not 40, some number that isn't, you know, just two more than the normal roster. But where I really miss them, JR, is the hangover day lineup. The day after a team clinches a playoff spot, a division berth, whatever, the next day, unless they have a ton to play for, like if they've already got everything wrapped up, they know what new seed they're going to be, it's late in the season, the lineup that those teams roll out there was one of my favorite niche baseball things. You could just get, it's basically the AAA lineup, guys you've never heard of. It's kind of a shame we never got to see the 2019 Brewers roll out or maybe they did on the last game of the year, but they could have rolled out a great hangover day lineup with like Tyler Austin hitting cleanup.
Yes.
Then Tyrone Taylor could have been like leading off, Hernan Perez. Oh, we could have, it could have been sweet. I don't even know who their like third catcher is, but the third catcher is always a fun one on there. So MLB should institute five free AAA players the day after you clinch a playoff spot.
Yeah, you got one regular in the lineup who's either a straight edge or somebody who is trying to hit a certain plateau in his contract incentives.
And like a lot of the time, it's just like, okay, we finally done it. Give the guys a day
for sure.
off. But there's also, there's some enjoyment that goes on after a team clinches.
There is some irony. We didn't even talk about your time in the clubhouse as the Cardinals were celebrating. You got some great sights and sounds there. But
I was there.
There is some irony to Doug Melvin, former general manager, was a huge advocate of changing the roster rules, which he's absolutely right. They made no sense that suddenly teams could just have 40 guys on their active roster for the last month of the season. Why do you play under some rules for 5 months and then month number six, the most important one, you decide, hey, let's just do it weird. And the Brewers took full advantage of it. The irony is the Brewers took full advantage of that, made it work for them. I think it was a huge part of their process in 2018 and 2019. And now without that, it's just not the same. They're not able to do what they weren't able to replicate it in 21 or 22. You know, they were fine in the second half in 21, but like down the stretch, they were just, you know, nothing special. And 22, obviously they haven't had Craig Timber, in really any way, shape or form. So it's sort of funny how that played out. Doug Melvin's absolutely right. They should have absolutely changed it. It's just, I do miss that. I miss, you know, the kids coming up that get like, end up getting like six at bats and they're kind of interesting. You know, it's just kind of interesting that, that they get their first experience. You get to know them a little bit. Hasn't happened this year. Very sad. Any thoughts from the Cardinals clubhouse that stick out to you since you were in there covering that?
Miles Michaelis had some interesting things to say.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Refresh our memories for that. That was good stuff.
Well, there's a Tupac lyric about something that revenge is the only thing sweeter than revenge. I don't think I can say it on this family podcast, but he mixed it up and said, well, the thing sweeter than revenge is ice cream, and we're all out of ice cream.
Uh-huh.
So, and he was also a bit confused, openly confused about the Brewers trading Hader. And the Cardinals players I talked to were not mad about that trade one bit. They were kind of just like, what's going on? Okay, we're just going to take it. We'll take it.
Was Miles Michaelis there in 2018 when the Brewers clinched in St. Louis? Was he on the team?
He was.
Okay.
He was.
Okay.
That's why I talked. The guys I talked to was it wasn't. Well, I guess some of the main names were there in 2018 as well, but like it wasn't like Arenado and Gold. I didn't talk to Arenado, Goldschmidt. I talked to DeYoung, Jack Flaherty, Pujols, Michaelis. I think that was it. Oh, Brendan Donovan as well. Even though he's a rookie, but
yeah. Yeah, guys who were there, like you said, for 2018 when the Brewers clinched at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, memorable for Adolis Garcia falling down around third base. It would have been the tying run, and the Brewers got that out at the plate, wound up winning by a run. Jeremy Jeffress gets the save. I'm sure a lot of Brewers fans remember that one. So yeah, flipped the script this year and clinching in Milwaukee's visiting clubhouse instead. And just one more grace note on this season, Kurt. One more.
What a year it's been.
What a year it's been. If the Brewers clinch the do end up going to the playoffs, if six outcomes go one way, we will of course have an emergency podcast midweek. We'll have to talk about it and what the Brewers have ahead for the playoffs. I don't expect that to be the case, so we'll probably try to catch up again next Sunday, wrap up the season, look ahead to maybe some of the questions in the offseason, and that'll be it, guys, for at least the 2022 season. We'll certainly touch base if big news happens after that, but yeah, don't expect a whole lot on this front after this next week, Kurt. Sad. It's sad.
Yes, very sad. Very, very sad.
But thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Micro Brew. Sorry, it's been a rough finish. What an eventful, and not in a good way, mostly, week of Wisconsin sports. Paul Chryst getting fired, or I don't even know if he's fired or stepped aside. I'm not even sure what's happening as we record this on Sunday. But he's no longer going to be head coach of the Wisconsin football team, which took a hideous loss on Saturday. You can read all about that at jsonline.com. Jeff Patricus, Mark Stewart, our Badgers reporters are on that story. The Packers survive against a third-string quarterback at Lambeau Field in overtime. Obviously, we'll have full coverage of that, and the Packers going to London next week. Again, jsonline.com, packersnews.com. Check out all that stuff. And that's it. All right, Kurt, thank you for joining me, man. We'll chat with you again probably one more time.
Talk to you later.
All right, see ya. Thanks for listening to Micro Brew, everybody.